Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, and delighted to have as our special guest today, Esther Nicholson, author of Soul Recovery. Esther will share her difficult yet inspiring journey from cocaine addiction and domestic abuse to a life of wholeness and success as a speaker, teacher, practitioner, therapist, and world-renowned singer, working alongside legendary greats such as Bette Midler and Rod Stewart. Esther's book, Soul Recovery, offers suggestions for changing lifelong patterns and for making new choices to heal patterns of dependence that often show up as substance abuse, food dependencies, unfulfilling or damaging relationships, and other addiction-like behaviors. Hi, Esther. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Cheryl. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And mine, too. Esther, one of the goals of Healing From Within is to help listeners delve deeply within themselves to discover a deeper connection to their human spirit and soul in order to begin to let go of the past and to find and release into the world the highest values of spirit, love, compassion for self, and the return to joy, health, and prosperity that is their divine right. But first, it is necessary to recognize the fears and challenges of our day-to-day lives and the distractions of the outside world. Then it becomes possible to recognize another aspect of our being, our inner voice or essence. Your story, Esther, reflects that discovery and offers hope to so many who are struggling to find their core values and a way back to love, peace, harmony, and balance. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Esther will share the easy-to-follow program of study and daily practices offered in her book, containing a spiritual technology that empowered and carried her to greater fulfillment, helping her finally realize that no matter what had happened to her in the past, the ability to change and become healthy was within her power and indeed also yours. So we'll begin, Esther. Please tell our listeners what addiction was about for you, what had happened in your life, and what you were seeking to escape when smoking cocaine.
Right. Well, Cheryl, my addiction started way before I even knew what cocaine was. And that addiction, when I began my recovery process and I looked back over the years of my life, I realized that, wow, I was addicted from the time I was 5 years old. But I wasn't addicted to anything, you know, like substance abuse. I was addicted to my own thinking. I was addicted to the 100 forms of fear that Bill Wilson talks about in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just can't remember a time, even when I was a little girl, that I wasn't afraid, that I didn't have that knot in my gut of, oh my God, do they like me? Do they want me? Do I belong? Am I worthy? Am I enough? And of course, that is the foundation of all addiction, when you have those kinds of illusions running as the activity of your consciousness. And the cause of that kind of activity is based in the false belief that you're separate and apart from wholeness. And wholeness is God or spirit or universal principles, the universe.
And absolutely. And I think also, yeah, Esther, as a sensitive child, because I've read your book and what happened to you and the upbringing that you had, you were expected to be perfect. And so many parents and teachers put that upon young children, and they lose very quickly their zest for life and their enjoyment in just being the beautiful souls that they are. Now, there was a quote from the book that reads, "Any addiction, whether it involves drugs, alcohol, sex, shopping, social media, food, work, exercise, or ideologies, are frequently referring to that which becomes an obsession, fulfilling the empty spaces within our lives, within our hearts. And these addictions try to alleviate stress, to anesthetize the pain of anxiety, loss, fear, a sense of not enough." That is from the preface of your book, and according to that definition by Michael Beckwith, So you were just describing exactly that. So we're all finding our way back to remembering who we are as spiritual beings with great potential to love and to move past these fears of our childhood, which, as you said, began for you and many, many, many others very early. And Michael Beckwith also wrote, and this is important, when we don't know how to create change from within, we reach outside of ourselves and become attached to that which appears to provide instant relief. In Eastern spiritual traditions, an attachment is any substance or habitual action, even to religion or do-gooding. But by reclaiming your innate power and expanding your inner self, you can handle life challenges from an expansive perspective. But sometimes we can regain this inner power only by reaching rock bottom. So, Esther, what was the rock bottom for you?
Well, I would say that on our spiritual journey, we have many rock bottoms, and how wonderful that is, because each rock bottom, especially if you're on a spiritual journey in a conscious way, it can be used as the motivating factor for you to go deeper and to heal. So when I was in my addiction, I had many rock bottoms, Cheryl. I can't tell you how many times, you know, I found myself in incomprehensible, demoralizing situations, or I'd spent my last dime, or, you know, I didn't show up for my daughter the way I had promised I would. And that was my bottom on that day, until that obsession would just blindside me again and take me over and make me renege on all of my promises. But I think that and all of that led to the big rock bottom. And the big rock bottom and the last straw for me was when I was on my way to the drug dealer's house.
Can I read that, how you described that in the exact words? Because it's really so powerful.
Yeah.
And you wrote, you describe how desperate you were, and you wrote this.
Yeah.
I've done it again. When all the drugs were gone, the realization of having spent my very last dime dawned on me. My frightened little daughter and I left the drug dealer's house walking down the street at 4 a.m. The shame came pouring out of me, and I cried hysterically. Mommy will never do it again, baby. I'm so sorry. She looked at you with hope and disbelief all at once, even at her young age. She'd heard this promise before. She already knew we'd come this way again, and we did. How old was your daughter at that time?
She was only 7.
Mm-hmm. Well, 7 in this day and age, with the machines, computers, and everything else, these kids are much, much older. And living with you in the situation was probably helped her grow up much faster. But, Esther, you come from a very interesting family. Your father was, I believe, a minister?
Yes, a Baptist minister.
Right. So you had an introduction to spirit and certain principles about God. Would you tell us something about what your father thought God was, and eventually what you came to know God really was?
Well, I had a very shaky foundation in religion, which we know is very different than having a spiritual experience of your own.
Absolutely.
So I was raised in a very religious household. You know, my father was a good man. He was such a loving man, where he embodied, you know, the principles of love and humility. But my father was also, you know, very fearful, you know, in a lot of ways as well, because he was serving, you know, a God that was outside of yourself somewhere, that was judgmental and exclusive, you know, that would exclude you if you weren't absolutely perfect. So I grew up in a family where there were a lot of dualistic kind of feelings going on. On one hand, there's this, you know, loving God who, you know, has got your back and you have faith in, and then on the other hand, you're supposed to fear this God and not wear shorts on Sundays, or you would go to hell. So, you know, I grew up with a lot of confusion about that.
I think most of us did. Whatever religion we were from, I think we grew up with parents who were fearful and following a lot of just beliefs, but they weren't really pulling this wisdom from within them that children know so readily. And that's why we all had all these questions about what are we really supposed to do? How are we supposed to proceed?
Right.
Because it was contradictory. Now, Esther, you wrote, metaphysics relates to the philosophical study of the nature of being, how our thoughts interact with the experiences we have in life. And this deals with the realm of the invisible reality outside the confines and limitations of our five senses. It can be called the unseen world and the world of energy or spirit or the world of formlessness. It is also the cause of the study of cause and effect and how the law of attraction works in our lives. Now, this is a scientific, also a spiritual look at a connection to all of life, very different from your father's thinking. And
absolutely. The way that I was raised left you disempowered and disconnected from your own soul, from your own intuition, whereas metaphysics reconnects you back to your reality, to your innate identity as not, you know, one with God, but an expression of God.
Absolutely.
An expression of life. And it is from this place that we get to think our thoughts and speak our words according to that which we desire or that to which we don't desire. You know, either way is an affirmation.
To make choices,
so,
to make choices that are coming from within us. And, you know, our relationship must first be with ourselves, as the external world is really only a mirror, so we can begin to see the dominant thoughts and beliefs that are governing our behavior, so we can make the best choices. Well, let's go on to say something about the 12-step program you provide in your book, and you offer a tool to develop spirituality and a connection to what we're talking about, this source or universal energy or God, in the form of 6 keys for personal discovery. So we have to begin to do a few things before we can even get to the 12-step program. So what are some of these keys to help us with our personal discovery?
Right. Well, first of all, there are 12 keys, 12 keys to healing addiction. So my whole program in my book is Soul Recovery, 12 Keys to Healing Addiction. And what I talk about is that the 12 keys are unification of the 12 steps of recovery and metaphysical principles. And so for the first 10 years of my sobriety, the 12 steps of recovery, they were just perfect, and they changed me, and they got me sober, and they supported me in having a spiritual experience unlike I would ever have imagined. You know, it took me out of the religious experience into a spiritual experience. But at the end of 10 years, they stopped working exactly as they were supposed to. They're designed to take you to a certain level, and then to be used as a catalyst to take you into deeper spiritual principles. And so when I found metaphysics, new thought, ancient wisdom, I found that the way those principles were taught did not get under the hood of the childhood traumas and the abandonment and the rejection and the betrayal and all the stuff that most of the planet is walking around with those core wounds.
Yeah.
And in the 12 step programs, you know, we're still walking around talking about we're powerless after 20 years. So I needed to find a way to bridge those two teachings for my own healing. And when I found a way to work those two sets of principles for my own healing, I unified those and put those into a comprehensive teaching for others to be able to do that as well.
Yeah, and I think some of the plan or keys that you showed to begin personal discovery included setting intentions, going deeper within yourself, contemplation, and journaling. Very important to start to write down and be aware of your thought patterns. And then you say affirmations, of course, help us to figure out what's really important in our individual life and then taking the steps. It's not only about intending. It goes into the next move, which is taking action and new behaviors in alignment with all the principles that we're forming. And and we'll get back to something about God for a minute, because in the metaphysical view, you suggest that there are indescribable infinite aspects of the wholeness or oneness. There's really no opposite. There's really only one God of love. And since God in his divine nature is eternal life, this essence is encoded into all that we are and all that we will be. And disease and human tragedy are the result of illusion. Our ego, our thinking, and the people and the experiences around us. You give a great example. Can you tell us about the water? I love the example you gave of how we are sort of one with God, like
water. You know, and people that are in the 12-step recovery programs, and even people that are in churches, you know, they kind of miss that very important foundational step of being in conscious union with this thing that we call God. I also talk about in the book that the word God cannot describe that which is indescribable.
Yes.
You know, and that we, you know, that is a human word to describe that which we really can't describe.
We need to feel it. Yeah.
Hmm?
We need to connect on a level through meditation of a personal communication.
Right. So how I have the analogy that it is very simple to help someone understand or to catch a glimpse of their oneness with life, spirit, God, universe, presence is, you know, imagine you're standing in front of a vast ocean, and the ocean is made of salt, minerals, and water. And you take a cup and you dip into the ocean. Has the quantity of the ocean diminished, or has the quality diminished? It's just the quantity that is diminished. The quality, everything that is in that vast ocean is now extended into that cup of water. And it's the same thing, you know, with our relationship to the divine, that this infinite, inexhaustible, eternal, invisible source, energy, power, has dipped inside of itself and recreated us out of it, not in addition to it, but out of it. So we are that which it is. And another analogy that I use is the block of mahogany wood. If you have a block of mahogany wood, and out of that mahogany wood, you create a table, a lamp, and a chair. Now, let's say that table, lamp, and chair, you know, have been moved around to different homes and apartments and so forth. They might have a few nicks and cuts and bruises on them. But the nicks, cuts, and bruises does not diminish the quality of the mahogany. The table, lamp, and chair maintains its integrity as mahogany. And that's the same thing with us. We're still one with God. We are expressions of God, even though we might have some nicks, some cuts, and bruises.
Even though, you know, we have to get beat up a little bit to to have new opportunities so we can grow. It's part of the process of a physical life. And it's described beautifully by you. You know, when there is addictive behavior of any kind, it's not limited to drugs. It finds its way into everything in our lives, relationships, seeking approval, addiction to negative mental chatter in our head. What did you discover was the real culprit or reason for these happenings in your life, and indeed in all of our lives? What is the real thing that's missing?
Bottom line, Cheryl, root cause, the disconnection from the soul. And that's why the book is entitled Soul Recovery, that we must recover our soul that has been buried under the illusion of separation and unworthiness and not enoughness, which has nothing to do with your true identity. Your soul is perfect and complete. It is lovely. It is beautiful. It is magnificent. It is the complete idea. It is all wisdom. It is perfect. But when we disconnect from it in consciousness, now we are like a branch cut off from the tree. Yeah.
Right. So when we are like that, we have a lack of love, self-love. We have a lack of self-worth, and we have a tremendous fear of abandonment. And it's like a wounded child dependent on the wrong values and the wrong emphasis for their personal life path. And they also think they have a need for approval. When we get past all those things, we realize we have everything we need to survive and to do well in this life. We were born with it. It is our soul right, our natural right to be in a loving, peaceful, joyful, healthy state. And that's what
Michelle, I just want to just say one thing here, is that we don't have to get past all those things. All we have to do is reconnect to our soul, and it will start to dissolve all those things.
Right.
It will divinely guide us and direct us into how to turn away from those illusions and recognize our wholeness. So I think that that's where people get off a little bit. Is that they try to pull the cart before the horse, and they're trying to get rid of these illusions. You can't get rid of illusions.
No. They don't have to get rid of it. They have to remember who they are. As beautiful, divine, spiritual beings, and they have to realize that the cultural and societal views may have not been expressed to us and may have been embedded in our at a cellular level in our thoughts and in our body that have created this suffering and this sorrow
and this
pain. It was brought to us. We did not come into the world with any of that. So, Esther, Esther, as you began to put together a clear perspective of your divine spiritual gifts and your joyful life, you began to have many new opportunities and to work with amazing talents. Can you tell us something about how you began your singing career and the people you interacted with?
Yeah, well, you know, for the first 10 years of my sobriety, I didn't sing. I forgot that I was a singer. And I now look at that as a gift. It was like the universe within me saying, I need you to totally focus on the recovery of your soul and not focus on being a singer. And when it was time for me to reawaken to that, I did in a big way. And I just said, you know, I want to sing. So I started visioning and visualizing. And, you know, I remembered that time when I was 5 years old, you know, a little girl, standing in my backyard with a hairbrush for my microphone, singing to the trees, pretending they were my adoring fans. And so that passion was reignited within me. And the next thing I knew, you know, I was singing at church and someone heard me sing, and they knew Bette Midler, and she happened to be looking for a soprano to sing with the Harlettes, and I was available. And it was like, bam. It looks like, bam, that's how it happened, but really.
But it didn't really happen that way.
It was really
part of your life plan to go through what you went to discover the moral fiber of your energy and soul so that these people could bring such joy to you and you such joy to them. Now, Rod Stewart, in his endorsement for your book, wrote something very beautiful. He wrote, Esther Nicholson has all the essential qualities of greatness, a unique tone, wonderful phrasing, emotional flexibility, and passion. In a nutshell, the girl's got soul. Esther, what would you like to say about your experience with working with this master artist? Because that's what we're here on this planet to do, to all bring out our creative forces. We all have so much to express and so much love to share. And music is one of the greatest avenues for expressing the soul. So can you tell us something about that?
Well, again, I was using the law of attraction without always being aware that's what I was doing. And I remember when Rod Stewart came out with the song, Have I Told You Lately That I Love You, which I believe is a Van Morrison song. And God, he sounded so soulful on that song. And it so moved me. And I bought the CD, and I would stand in front of the mirror and pretend that I was singing it. and I would sing it to his CD. And so you can imagine the magic of it when I find myself at Madison Square Garden, you know, or at Albert Hall in Europe, you know, sitting on a stool next to him in front of 20,000 people singing Have I Told You Lately That I Love You.
I'm sure you had some tears in your eyes then, too.
Oh, yeah, just definitely goosebumps and just the confirmation of, wow.
But
it's so easy. It's so easy, Cheryl, but it's not simple.
No.
Or it's simple, but it's not easy. It's like this is the way the universe works, you know, that you believe it, you step into it in your imagination, and you start working towards it, not efforting, but working towards it. And the universe says, absolutely, beloved, you know, I am friendly to your plans.
And that's when manifesting begins, and it's possible for all of us. What is the one truth you would like people to take away after reading your wonderful book?
The one truth that I would love for them to take away is if you are not addicted to substance, any kind of substance, then I want you to look at your addictions to the other areas in your life. You can have a behavioral dependence addiction and not addiction to substance. An addiction is when you have lost the power to choose. And so if you have lost the power to choose your next thought or how you're going to feel today or how, you know, or if you're going to procrastinate or not or if you're going to pick up the phone and call that unhealthy relationship or spend that money that you know you're not supposed to be spending, then this book, Soul Recovery, is for you. But it's not for you because you're broken or damaged or anything is wrong with you. It is for you because you have simply forgotten your true nature as an expression of God. And I want you to remember who you are because you deserve that and you're worthy of that.
Absolutely. Nobody's a bad person. We've just had some challenging experiences, and without uncovering secrets, we can retreat right back into this delusional part of the story that our ego tells us, that fearful part, and we don't want to go there. We want to go to the heart and the wisdom of our soul. I want to thank you, Esther Nicholson, for sharing your beautiful, powerful, and honest story of a challenging young life and the road you traveled to restore yourself to your true heritage as a divine and loving expression of God. Please read Soul Recovery to discover your plan for moving past any of your restrictions, limitations, and fears, and to find your true state of well-being. Go to www.soulrecovery.org or esthernicholson.com. In summarizing today's show, I would like to read something that clearly expresses how we can lose ourselves and then find ourselves again. Esther wrote, "Before I became hypnotized by negative beliefs and fears, I was fearless, free, loving, open-minded, generous, fun, ambitious, trusting, centered, and clear. I knew there was nothing I couldn't accomplish. I trusted others with an open heart. I felt a sense of well-being and love. I loved life. I loved myself completely and was excited about life. Esther and I hope you will rediscover yourself by doing the work necessary to live from within your own heart, moving past any challenge of the external world, remembering you are the divine expression of universal life force and love, and no one person or situation can take away this power of creation. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com to hear leaders in the field of metaphysical, scientific, and the spiritual, holistic, and artistic communities who offer their stories for finding out about living your best life. Thank you.